The first is, we cannot allow the environment to become a distraction from all our other problems, as many powerful elements in this country would like to see it become. We have to take care of that environment and at the same time stop the Vietnam War, repeal the draft. Cut back the size of the armed forces to repeal the draft and not cut the size of the armed... To repeal the draft and not simultaneously or before cut back drastically the size of the armed forces would be a national disaster. We have to do both things, preferably cut back the armed forces before we get rid of the draft, and then cut that military budget to hell and gone, way down, way, way down, and that'll give us some money. And when you've done those four things, you'll have some money to spend, and you can begin to take care of all the things we need, the housing, the schools, the public transportation. The auto is the biggest polluter. We need fewer cars on the road and better public transportation and open beaches and no unwanted children. Cheap or preferably free contraception and abortion for everyone all over the world. And to help get all those things, lower the voting age! Lower the voting age! And that brings me to the other trap, and you'd better watch that one carefully. And that second trap, that's that we must not allow anti-pollution to become the new multi-billion dollar industry in America. We mustn't allow the pollution to go right on merrily. And that's what it's going to try to do. Because pollution, if we're to deal with it properly, has to be stopped at its source. And that means you go up against the auto industry. And that means you go up against the oil industry. And that means you go up against the lumber industry. And that means you go up against the power industry. And those are all very powerful forces. Pollution has to be cut at its source. Watch that very carefully. We're constantly being told all the billions of dollars coping with pollution is going to cost. If you don't watch out, the pollution is going to go right on and will superimpose on it a new multi-billion dollar business of anti-pollution. And they'll be the same business in these days of conglomerates. It'll be a different division of the same business. One division will pollute and the other division will make just as much money removing the pollution. So watch out. That's the other trap. So we've got a lot to do. And to do it, keep on marching. Don't get tired. Don't lose your patience. Just keep coming out. Whenever the weather's good, come out into the sunshine. Come out into the fields. There's no grass. What pollution means? Promotion. Don't know. There's something I haven't talked about yet at all. You know why? That's right. It's coming up now. It's coming up now. That list of things that I was talking about is a list of things, every bit of which can be done by Congress. And that's why I presented that list as I did. Those are all things that Congress can do for us. And some of them they've begun to do. And if we push hard enough, we can get them to do it all. And that's our present chance at a revolution through our own institutions. I'm still hoping. I think we need a revolution, but to me, a revolution means a turnabout, a drastic turnabout. And I still hope that we can vote it. And I still hope that it can be done without spilling blood. And I still hope that if there is blood spilt, that it'll be spilt by those who are trying to repress that revolution rather than by those who are trying to produce it. The job for us now is to repossess America, to try to repossess our country. Don't leave patriotism to the Neanderthals. It's our country. It's our flag. I'm talking to you as an American patriot. But the biggest stain on the American scene, I haven't mentioned at all, because that can't be passed by Congress. It's racism. It's to make the American dream come true. You know, liberty and justice for all. And that includes Huey Newton. And that includes Bobby Seale. Don't worry about going into the streets. The Yaleys are going into the streets. My God, if you can meet Yaleys in the streets, you've made it. They're in the streets. The streets are good enough for them, good enough for us all. And what are they marching for? To free Bobby Seale. And Bobby Seale is only the prominent name among a whole group of Black Panthers who are there in New Haven, sitting in jail without bail. They need help. They need to be watched. Why do you have to be a Black Panther to come out for justice for them, to defend them, to put up bail for them? No, you don't have to be a Black Panther. You just have to be an American. You just have to want justice for all. You just have to want our courts to function with due process for all. Martin Niemöller, the German Protestant clergyman who was sent to a concentration camp by Adolf Hitler, said it once and said it very well. Martin Niemöller said, "When they came for the communists, I wasn't a communist. I paid little attention. When they came for the Jews, I wasn't a Jew. I let it happen. And then they came for me." That's why you have to come out for justice for all, for justice for the Black Panthers, and be about it.
WBAI New York.
It's okay. So there's a program for America. You've heard all about Mr. Nixon's, or is it Mr. Mitchell's, Southern strategy? It calls on all the worst elements in American life We're calling on all the best elements in American life. A strategy for America. And it wouldn't hurt to have a few more slogans to go with it. I want to offer you a slogan. America is our home, not a business. Let's begin treating it as our home. It's high time. And another thing, all my thoughts about what we need, all my thoughts, however technical and complicated they become, reduce to one thing that summarizes it all for me. You do it that way, all the answers will come out right. I want to say it for you. A better world for children, not just American children, all children everywhere. I can add a word and make it a complete program. A better world for fewer children. That's my program for Philadelphia, for our country, for the world. Thank you.
Dr. George Wald, co-recipient of the 1967 Nobel Prize in Medicine Physiology, who is Higgins Professor of Biology at Harvard University, has just spoken at the Philadelphia Earth Day teach-in. He's receiving a standing ovation from the audience composed mostly of young people. Dr. George Wald.
Here is Odetta. Premiere this song. You talk about environment. The basic thing of the whole thing is lack of concern and cheating. Environment's all the same. Take a look at me. You're stepping on others and you're looking for someone else to blame. I'm a mighty soul. Part of a mighty world. Did you look at the moon? Systems go. I take a look at the moon. Where's the system to clean this crud below? It's a mighty moon. Try somebody. Mighty you, I'm a mighty me, we are mighty we, mighty we. I have taken liberties with this next song. It's a song, well, you'll hear what it is. Hey, Jude, don't be afraid. Take your country, you make it better. Remember, you let her in your heart, baby. You can start to make it better. Me now. You were made to go out and get her. Remember, you let her in your heart. Do something about her and start to make it better. Anytime you feel the pain, hey, you refrain. You carry the world on your shoulder. Let it out and let it in. Hey, you begin the movement you need. Baby, it's on your shoulder. Make it bad. Take your country, you'll make it better. Remember, you let her in your heart. You can start to make it. You make it better. Remember, you let her in your heart. Baby, you can start to make it better.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of the highlights of Earth Day being presented over WBAI. We hear now Paul Ehrlich. His speech is already in progress when we join it on this tape.
Although we get a very small number of calories out of the sea, we get 20% of our animal protein out of the sea. Should the sea die like Lake Erie, which it could do any time, essentially, the world will be pitched into the most colossal famines it's ever seen. It's highly unlikely civilization could survive it. Well, there are all kinds of these subtle environmental threats. There are some that are not so subtle but much ignored. One, of course, is the threat of worldwide plague. We came very close to losing something like two-thirds of humanity in 1967 when a very lethal virus, never before seen in man, transferred from monkeys to people in a virus laboratory in Germany. 30 well-fed, well-cared-for people got it, and 7 of them died. If that virus had gotten out into the world population as a whole, it is quite possible that we'd have lost two-thirds of all humanity because most people are not well-fed, highly resistant, and most people don't have any medical care whatsoever. We have the largest, densest, weakest population the world has ever seen. We have more hungry people than we had people in 1875. Therefore, we are a setup for a worldwide virus plague, something that medicine could do absolutely nothing about. Biologists are worried sick about this. Every person you add to the planet increases the chance of that kind of an end. Let me point out to you that the monkeys carrying this virus, which is called Marburg virus, were in the London airport 2 weeks before the transfer took place to laboratory personnel. If the transfer had occurred in the London airport, say into food handlers, that would have been the ball game. And finally, of course, I have to mention the threat of thermonuclear war. I don't want to go into detail on this because you all know about it, except it's amazing how Americans have pushed the threat out of their minds as it gets more and more real, as Mr. Nixon continues with his ABM nonsense and so on. Just let me point out a couple things about it. Every person you add to the planet reduces the per capita share of resources that are already short. The United States, with 6% of the people, already feels it has to grab 30% of the world's natural resources to keep its level of affluence. The Soviets feel the same way, the Japanese feel the same way, and so on and so forth. And by the way, Japan is a bellwether. You ought to keep your eye on her. And all the political scientists who are working on this say the same thing. Increased population and perceived demand, perceived need, and that leads to international conflict. So every person we add to the planet increases the chance of the big blow-up coming. And the big blow-up could very easily put an end to the whole system. Not kill everybody automatically with blast and radiation, but reduce the carrying capacity of the planet and make the entire environment tough enough so that survivors would not be able to make it. Let me point out to you that if we lose technological civilization, it can never be restarted because we no longer have an opportunity, say, for a new copper age. There isn't any high-grade copper lying around on the ground anymore except what we've already extracted. You can't get oil out now by poking around with a pointed stick. You got to drill down for 2 miles. Unless you got back going right away with what you could salvage from your technology, you could never restart simply because you need technology to get at the resources which keep technology going. The biggest effect from a thermonuclear war that the most desperate one might very well come from the weather, because there, and I'll finish my talk about the environment on this, there is probably the most immediate threat to all of our lives and safety, and that is changes we're making now in the weather or changes that could come about from a war due to the weather. At the moment, the planet is cooling off because we have put so much crud into the atmosphere. The warming trend that the CO2 addition caused up till 1940 has been overpowered. The turbidity of the atmosphere over the Central Pacific has increased 30% in the last decade. According to Reed Bryson, the meteorologist at the University of Wisconsin who is tracking this most closely, we are beginning to revert to a weather pattern in this country which we saw in the early 1800s. If we do that, our agricultural productivity will suffer a great deal because agriculture is tremendously dependent on the weather. We have this cooling veil of pollution over the entire Earth. Now, this means, among other things, that even if the climatic changes that we are entraining ourselves with the pollution don't do the job, we are one big volcanic explosion away from the end of civilization. In 1815, the volcano Tambora in Sumatra in the southern hemisphere exploded, and it lofted an estimated 150 cubic kilometers of dust into the upper atmosphere. That event was enough to cancel summer in 1816 in the northern hemisphere. Now, we've already started on a cooling trend. Can you imagine what a cancellation of summer in the northern hemisphere would mean to the world food situation? Think on it a bit. One volcanic explosion. A similar thing could be achieved by another one of Mr. Nixon's triumphs, the supersonic transport. It's not clear at the moment, but there's every indication that they will lay down contrails high above the tropopause, the area where the atmosphere mixes. We already have a discernible change in fisheries productivity in the North Atlantic from shading of fishing areas by the contrails of the jets that are flying now. There's an estimated 5% increase in the cirrus cloud cover over the North Atlantic, North America, and Europe due to jet contrails at the present time. And you see, putting down that reflective layer of cloud cools the earth. It reflects a lot of the sun's energy. According to Bryson and Wendland, if 300 SSTs should start operating, it would be quite possible to get 100% cloud cover over those areas. If you do that, you'll cool the Earth by roughly 10 degrees centigrade and pitch the world into the worst ice age it has ever seen. All cheering little possibilities, but of course you got to remember the SST might possibly get us a little advantage in foreign exchange, and surely that's a nice trade-off. Well, all right, we're living on our little spaceship. Some people seem to think there's a pilot, but I don't think there is. At least he's not at the controls. That's quite clear because we're careening all over the place. Nobody seems to have planned what we're doing very carefully. The passengers in the first class cabins are holding on to the goodies and planning to throw bombs at the people in steerage should they attempt to come and get any of the food. It's not a very cheering picture. And so one might say, you know, well, what's the use? Should we just give it all up and live it up for the next year or so until the end comes? Well, that's one very logical point of view. I would like to think, however, I'd like to be optimistic for a minute. I'd like to think that if mankind wanted to, it could solve these problems. I think actually the general outline of a solution is fairly simple and fairly clear, in fact, incredibly simple. It would consist of really just several things. One would be achieving population control, first here in the United States, because our population growth, particularly among white affluent Americans, is the most serious in the world because we're the big polluters and consumers on the globe. And we ought to start pushing our friends in the other overdeveloped countries into the same thing. We have to transition in the overdeveloped countries from what Kenneth Boulding, the famous economist, has called a cowboy economy. That's an economy which emphasizes production, consumption, throughput, pollution. It was named a cowboy economy because, of course, a cowboy economy, you can foul your campground. You see, the idea is you foul your campground and then you move further west. Well, that may work all right for Philadelphians. It's just hell on us San Franciscans. And transfer to a so-called spaceman economy in which you emphasize the quality of your capital, your human capital, and the capital goods that you have, and where you absolutely minimize your stress on the raw materials of the world and on the environment. It means, for instance, that if you had a government that was doing its job, you'd have a law that instantly said, no more big cars. Every car's got to be a small one with a weak, low compression ratio engine. You can drive them just as fast as big cars. You'd have your smog problem partially cured instantly. You would take a lot of stress off your natural resources. You'd be able to get to work faster. There'd be better parking. People could eventually learn to get their sexual kicks out of sex instead of convertibles. A very simple move that would inconvenience no one. And you would require, for instance, that the automobile manufacturers make the cars recyclable so that when you were done, you'd use your car for 30 years, you'd buy it on an installment plan. It would probably cost you $45,000 because it would be required to be to last for 30 years. It would have to be very well made. The kinds of things you can do, for instance, is take all the copper out of the automobile and replace it with aluminum, because then you get a much more high-quality scrap out of it when you melt it back down. Copper fouls up iron scrap. Aluminum is added steel melt anyway. This sort of thing. So you stop your wastage of resources, particularly the hard mineral resources. You see, you don't consume, you just disperse them, and you can stop a tremendous amount of that dispersion. And once you've started the overdeveloped countries on this road to de-development, to taking the stress off the resources of the environment, then you can turn around and do everything you can to help the underdeveloped countries of the world. Now, academicians Sakharov in the Soviet Union, C.P. Snow in Great Britain, a lot of people in this country all come to the same kinds of estimates of the amount of effort in terms of dollars that would be required to really go at it in the underdeveloped countries and try and bring them to a level of semi-development where they would have good housing, good food, good medical care, and be able to get industrial goods that they needed from the industrialized portions of the world. Our will, even if we wanted to,